and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Nancy Reddy. Nancy Reddy is the author of Double Jinx, a 2014 winner of the National Poetry Series, and the chapbook Barataria, forthcoming from Black Lawrence Press. Her poems have appeared in 32 Poems, Best New Poets, Best of the Net, the Iowa Review, and Tupelo Quarterly. The recipient of a 2017 New Jersey State Council on the Arts Fellowship in Poetry, a Promise Award from the Sustainable Arts Foundation, and a Walter E. Dakin Fellowship from the Sewanee Writers Conference. She teaches writing at Stockton University in southern New Jersey. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, really happy that you're here. And I wanted to say first, congratulations on your new chapbook.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's really new, isn't it?
It is very new. I think maybe 2 weeks old news now.
Okay. So you just found out you'll have Barataria with Black Lawrence Press.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When does that come out? Do you know?
February 2018.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to start with some poems from Double Jinx?
I will.
Okay.
Lucy and Chrysalis. 1 year, every girl in town smelled sweet with blood. That was the year you rode your high horse to the corner store, the year you fell in love with the sentence, how the thrust and stumble of syntax always makes good its promises. You spend lunchtime on the schoolyard, digging worms and blessing each one before tossing their mulchy bodies skyward. In the lunchroom, the other girls purse their gloss lips and clear the table. Now it's your birthday. The sliced cake sweats grease in the backyard. Soda fizzles in Dixie cup rose. The other girls whisper and giggle, won't sing, won't eat. The rented magician's jokes go flat, and worst of all, your chest is flat, though the big girls told you that when you finally pass the pencil test, they'd take you to the Bon Ton to buy a real bra with white lace and a front clasp for when the boys snap. And you try it, but your row of sharpened number twos clatter to the tile one by one. You decide you're sick of being a girl. You've read the books and know the time has passed for your discovery as a caterpillar or a Cinderella. You ride your bike to town and beg the wandering saints summering in the town square's gazebo to take them with you when the flock flies south for winter. You're done being the girl left holding the tin hand telephone's slack end. You'd rather be a hayfield or a hat pin. You thought by now you'd be a grocer or an acrobat. The title poem for the book, The Case of the Double Jinx, takes its inspiration from the Nancy Drew mysteries, which I loved when I was a girl. And so this, the full poem is in sections that kind of mimic the serial nature of the Nancy Drew stories. And I thought I would read just a couple of them. The Case of the Double Jinx. The Scarlet Slipper Mystery. You're Nancy Drew and you drive a blue coupe. You drive fast. Your mother is dead. She's the new hired help, and you're a nosy house guest. She's a model turned jewel thief, and you're hot on her trail. She's a pretender to the fortune of the country's richest missing bachelor. You're solving mysteries that stump the cops. You sass them back. You're flip-haired and eagle-eyed. You're a daredevil detective on the trail of a breathtaking escape. She fooled you once and won't again. The Mystery of the Wooden Lady. She's a cocktail dress, and you're day-old rye. You find a blonde hair on the sofa bed, stockings in the spare room. You come home late one night and find your house lit like a birthday. You tiptoe to the window, your skirt's hem catching on the hedges. She's in your house. She's dancing slow with Fickle Ned. She laughs at all his jokes. Now you're a pincushion. You're the sulfur smell of rotten eggs. You do the only thing you can. You run. The Clue in the Breakfast Nook. You run home to River Heights. You bolt the door. You're a sure shot, an expert swimmer, a gourmet cook. You bake birthday cakes and ice them all with arsenic. You learn to knit. You believe in the jinx. You won't say his name, won't look at the phone. She's a damsel in dishwashing gloves. She's at your kitchen table, sugaring her tea. Ned's a lost sock. She smiles your smile and wears his jacket. She hums, you're gimlet-eyed, you're losing steam. The strange message on the trailhead. You get him back, but he won't stay. Silly Ned, he wanders off. He's lost in state parks, disappears on dinner dates. You're on the case. He's lucky. You rescue him time and time again. You get him back in pieces. You swear you hear his voice before the dial tone clicks on. You find his toenail clippings on the tile. His name's a rock you rub against your teeth. He's a wishbone saved beside the kitchen sink. The triple hoax. She's a foxtrot. She's a jinx, and you can't speak. You're a Dahlia, and she's the state fair's bright-eyed Susans. Or she's the real Nancy, and you're a costume party. Didn't you feel made of paper? Didn't you hide for years from houses, the streets of windows that left you feeling skinned and eyed? Even the neighbor's house for sale, the mulch and rows of transplant tulips, their faces open, how their black stamens stared and stripped you bare. Bad magic. It starts out simple with blindfolds and sleights of hand. I'll be the girl you practice on. I'll let you pull a nest of ravens from my hair, then saw me open on your mother's couch. I'm very still. At the reservoir, when you strip and handcuff me for the underwater escape, I won't squirm or make a sound. But after a time, I tire of your illusions. I want real tricks, the kind that hurt, or none at all. For your final act, you stitch the raven's feathers to my skin, right through my favorite sequin dress. You stroke the soft down beneath the shoulder strap, but when my hands turn to talons, you won't let me touch you in any of the ways you've taught. I bring back carrion for your breakfast. I preen and squawk, and still you will not have me. Fool magician, I was such a good girl. Now I'll have your heart. Before the curtain falls and I crest off, I'll pluck it from your chest like a rabbit from a hat.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Nancy Reddy. She's reading from her book, Double Jinx. I'm still, and I know that we've talked about this before, but I'm still really happy that you won the National Poetry Series.
Thank you.
And that's a big accomplishment.
Thank you.
And also you won after sending out for 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is amazing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just a good thing. And okay, so I wanted to get that out. But I want to talk about your work. And it's not surprising that you won the National Poetry Series. I mean, it is that because it's such a huge thing, but it's not because your work is, when I think of your work, I think of very precise detail, a very clear spoken voice, and a lot of surprises. And I was just writing some things down while you were reading, and here's a couple moments from the poems. Here's one. You thought you'd be a hatpin or an acrobat. I'm a cocktail dress. You're a day-old rye. Now you're a pincushion. You're the sulfur smell of rotten eggs. It's just, your poems are filled with these evocative details that they keep coming and coming. It's not like there's just a couple. So can you talk about constructing your poems and how this all comes together?
Sure. So one of the things I think for this book in particular, when I felt like I had a book underway rather than just a bunch of poems that I was writing, is that I think the idea of transformation became very important. And there are a lot of poems in the book that deal with, in particular, adolescence, right? Because so many girls, I think, spend and are trained to spend their adolescence trying to figure out what they're going to turn into and when is the time. Yeah, I mean, and that's obviously.
You sort of have to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when is the time that I will become a woman or whatever the next thing is. And so I think that's what some of the, especially the kind of juxtapositions you're pointing to come from. And I think there was a certain point in my life where I felt like maybe I could become anything. Maybe I would become a grocer, or maybe I would be the president, or maybe I would be a ballerina. And those all seemed like kind of wonderful possibilities. And there certainly is a kind of, you know, tradition and mythology as well of, you know, girls turning into trees and turning into stone and all kinds of things. And so that was one of the
president
things.
Sounds good. Why don't you do that?
Yeah,
we need you right
I
now.
I don't even know if I know. It's too sad to even really talk about.
Okay. Yeah, we're not talking about it, but but don't forget that one. But so you were imagining all these as a young girl, all these things you could be, and you're saying that affected your poetry?
I think so. I mean, I think at least I realized that that was an important thread in the poems.
Okay.
And so I was able to then consciously write towards that, creating a collection rather than just kind of writing the poems. I wrote probably the first half of this book in my MFA. So that was when I felt like I had a project underway rather than writing the poem I needed to write every week for a workshop.
Okay. So the clarity and the, you know, your talent with detail, is that something, I mean, when I talk to you, you have that same clarity and you're very clear-minded and clear-spoken and full-bodied in your speech. So I wonder, I don't know if there's a relationship between that or not.
I think so. I'd like to think so. And I think for me, writing poetry and reading poetry is also a lot about perceiving and a way of being in the world. And I think that when I'm writing more and writing well for whatever that's kind of measurable, and also reading things that I love, I'm also happier with how I am in the world. And I think about, I taught high school English for 5 years after graduating from Pitt. And there were a lot of things that I really loved about that. But I also felt like my brain was so full, not just with teaching, but with all the details of my students' lives and telling a classroom full of 14-year-olds to throw out their gum and tuck in their shirts. And I moved to Madison for my MFA, and I remember so clearly sitting on the bus riding by the lake and thinking, like, I can see again. Like, I can see the world, and so I can write now in a different way than I had been able to for the 5 years before that.
Yeah, that's nice. That makes perfect sense. Now I have to go empty my brain right now.
I know. Well, and I worry about that. I worry about what I'm putting into my brain. And it's a cliche to talk about social media or, I mean, politics, which maybe we shouldn't talk about. But, you know, what are we putting into our brains when we're on Twitter and reading the New York Times to find out all the horrible things? And does that serve writing, relationships, being in the world? And I don't know, does it even serve kind of good political action? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's probably different for different writers. I mean,
absolutely.
Obviously, some writers are writing much more overtly political stuff right now and reporting in their poems in certain ways. So, yeah, I mean, that's a question that's definitely up right now more than ever.
And I've loved seeing some of that work, and I'm really amazed by people who are able to write and respond so quickly to political events, because I feel like it takes me a long time to think and respond. So that's not the kind of work that I'm doing now, but I'm very glad that other people are.
Me too, absolutely. Can you read some more?
Absolutely. My girlhood apothecary. It hurt at first, having a body. My new skin itching like an opened wound, like the daylilies splitting the soil beside the shed. Now I lay each morning beneath this moth-pocked canopy. I remember father in his milk truck, mother in the hen house, spilling grain and pocketing eggs. Inside the nursery, kittens stalked the babies sleeping in their bassinets. That house was where I learned to name the world correctly. Learned lobelia, chrysanthemum, narcissus, forsythia. Which flowers poison and which to use for garnish. I learned that when I loved you, I didn't need to eat. Spent 1 year there, a hysterical mute. So tell me again how for years all I did was disappoint. Tell me again, I dare you, sweet, that she's the one who loves you better. Each time I travel back to you, your cheeks are thinner, your touch more brittle. Paper anniversary. The happy couple's in the kitchen, so I'm in the side yard doing my best imitation of a doghouse. Inside, the wife pops champagne and pours it in the bridal flutes while the husband hand washes the china. He's cooked her coq au vin. the leftovers cool in the weighty Dutch oven a distant aunt ordered off the registry. The wife unwraps a novel bookmarked with a plane ticket from the last trip they took apart. They take the year-old top tier, weeping, from its corner of the freezer. He carves a slice and places an iced rosette inside her open mouth. Outside, frost grips the windows. The gift wrap flares a toxic orange in the hearth. I'm an outbuilding. My shingles won't stick, and my foundation's made of sod. The wife is loved. She gets to sleep inside the house. Birds keep nothing in their bones. My dear Miss Z, I have been made a fool of. The far wind harrows me, these limb-stripped voices, this ghost pipe, a hymnal lined with splintered bone. Years I thought he'd be my story's end, and he was not. Pity me, these indiscretions, my simpering. He thinks only of your slivered tongue, your thighs. When the final bird was served, I ate it all and left the rest for scrap. These bones have not yet whitened to your taste. You demand patella, clavicle, a toothsome ankle, a child's milk molar, rooted still to jaw. I would like to bend before you, brush your hair. I offer up this flayed skin, a hyphenated strip, your fair hair, a hieroglyph, your face, a bitter white, the bitten cuticle pinking. Pity me, these long-lost wishes. When night sails down, the howling is dreadful. You say there is no thing like death. But I have been bent and entered by prayer, and if this is not death's slender walking. All good girls deserve. My dearest Miss Z, I know you, dear. Have seen you standing on your porch each evening, backlit by starlight. I know the year you thin to bone, the way all good girls do. I know the blade, the rhythm as it strips and hones, how the body pedals up obedient beneath its weight. I would like to hold your wrist to flame, to see the blue veins lit by the candle's pulsing heart, the arterial thumping. I would like to tell you how he held me down, how I said only deeper. His name a sore, I can't stop tonguing. You have said that I should be ashamed, but I have words for you. I was not raised for this, to be the other. My mother taught the salad fork, the polished silver, the body's openings named in a hush, that a good girl crosses at the ankles, that a lady shows herself by the foot's high arch. I was a girl once, too. I wanted the wound.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Nancy Reddy, reading poems from her book, Double Jinx. You know, I've noticed in your poems this cutting and slicing kind of feeling, and a lot of language, mm-hmm. too. And I was, again, writing some things down that was kind of scaring me, like patella, clavicle, bitten cuticle, flayed skin, thin to the bone, blade. You know, it's all through your poems. I mean, not in every poem, but there's this edge that is going to cut.
Yeah.
It's going to cut.
Yeah.
Not the reader necessarily, but is cutting in the poems. And I've always noticed that and really admired that, but also wondered about it.
Yeah.
What is that blade doing in your poems?
I mean, some of it, a lot of it probably has to do, I think, with the idea of girlhood and transformation into womanhood and the way that I think kind of the ideal woman's body is smaller and takes up less space. And I think some of it has to do with that, the idea of crafting a body or maybe cutting a body in smaller parts.
You mean culturally?
I think so. I mean, I think that speaking. We, I mean, in smaller, yes, in terms of, you know, dress size or whatever, but I think also the way that women are coached to like sit on the bus in a small way, whereas men kind of, I mean, the idea of spreading. And then also taking up less space, I think, through language and not wanting to call attention to yourself. And so I think that those moments in those poems are probably me trying to think through that and perhaps making very literal something that is slippery and usually kind of implicit.
Slicing up those ideas or slicing up the body in certain poems. I really like that one poem that began, "It hurt at first having a body."
Yeah, and I think, I don't know that I think when I'm in adolescence, as a woman, like suddenly you have this new body. And I mean, I also feel that way a little bit now. I have two little boys and suddenly, you know, I also have a new body, and it's a very strange thing to figure out how to inhabit the world differently, how to be seen by the world differently. In that poem also, and in some of the other ones from that grouping I just read, was thinking also about, I think the idea of grief and, I don't know, certain kinds of sadness maybe as a journey into the underworld and then coming back and kind of trying to think, what is it like to be in a body again after mm-hmm. after that kind of sadness?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's, I mean, some of the slicing too seems to point to anger and
mm-hmm, yes.
And there's bitterness comes up in the poems too, and the word bitter comes up
mm-hmm.
and you know, I like that edge a lot in your poems, but it's inesclicable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, will be sliced when you're reading your poems.
And I think that I wanted, as again, thinking of the project of a book, for there to be, I don't know, there is something a bit maybe kind of claustrophobic and inescapable about that. Those ideas in the poem that keep coming in the poems in the book that keep coming back, and some of that I think is true of the work that I'm doing now as well, and some of it is not. Some of those are concerns that are not quite as pressing for me mm-hmm. as they were, you know, mm-hmm. several years ago when I was first writing these poems.
Okay, so you were going to read some new poems from your chapbook.
I am.
Okay,
and so this chapbook. Inhabits kind of the South Louisiana swamps immediately before and after a hurricane and thinks about those swamps as a kind of liminal space where maybe there are saints appearing and mythological figures and other kinds of magical transformations. So this is all kind of set against the landscape of South Louisiana and hurricanes. Dirge. First, the sky. Broken by birds, flying at the wrong season. Then the heat goes out, and the breath goes out, and we are left alone and voiceless, between the blue, untextured sky and the terrible, smooth water. And then the howling, like the seam ripped out, and all the underwaters and the howling gods. After, the live oaks and honey locusts, storm-shorn, the shorebirds' great nest splintered, and all the fishing houses split-legged and sodden, the dead lifted in their rotten boxes and left to bob in storm water, the shoreline carried out to sea. What is this raw and wind-worn place we have survived into? The wrong gods roar into our lungs now. A weeping sound like that, like those birds calling across the suddenly open water. Girl chooses flight. She bought a black dog because she wanted bad luck. She drove south as far as the dark mood would move her. And on the radio, nothing but Christ and Zydeco. She drove long hours through the parched towns and two-pump truck stops of the northern parishes, the highway striped with blown-out tires, her hood and windshield black with love bugs locked in mating. and then the swamp before her, like a ballroom with a lid torn off. The air at that first hour had the sheen and hue of polished silver. Slender tree trunks, weathered gray and splintered, poked through still water. A voice said, "Stay." She stayed. The girl seemed to stay like that for days, a fixed star in the emergency pull-off lane. At night, the black dog blanketed her, and at dawn, they pressed their faces to the glass. Hard to say what she thought of then, or what she waited for. Then the god appeared to her in denim. He asked her for one kiss, and when she dodged, he spit into her mouth. After that, the girl's hair grew golden and sticky as corn silk. After that, the girl spoke only lies. Storm Pastoral. On the last day, the radio broadcasts report a deer in the city. How it walked on neutral ground, on sidewalks, through gardens, through Audubon Park. But how did it get here? The city of water like a teacup, a cupped palm in the Gulf, the Mississippi and Lake Pontchartrain, the Twin Span, the Causeway and I-10 over swamps, the only way out. This swishing thickness, the sound of water in the body, of weather in the bones, like those men in the South Pacific who survived shipwreck, sharks, the screams of other men, rescue. And when the hands descended from the rescue boats, the men's skin was waterlogged and peeled off in sheets. Before and after, botched. You made promises. When I saw the herd of swine switch to admirers, saw their flowing locks and cloven pedicures, I was in for both a penny and a pound. All spring, I was your little lamb, held in thrall. You liked me smaller, fresh shorn and smelling still of creek bed and switchgrass. All fall, you gorged on fatback bacon, pork chops, and leafy greens braised in rendered lard. You turned your gracious face from all of us. The girls turned back to swine. The ice and wind that winter stripped me, and I licked the runoff from the troughs, gnawed the tender center from my bed of straw. I believed once in your prayers and your conversion stories. I was a fool and am still made of flesh.
The poetry of Nancy Reddy. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.